Sam Rudofsky, Sam Nation Live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Yes, if you're left-leaning and are tuned in, get your emotional support animal ready. You'll need it. 1-800-222-5222 if you'd like to be on the program. Sam@samnation.com is the email. And as always, we are broadcasting loud and clear from the Sweet James studios, deep behind the orange curtain in an undisclosed location. And that is for our safety as much as it is for yours. Aha! Now, before we get to the political news of the day, and believe me, there's quite a bit everywhere from the net neutrality decision from the FCC is big. If you use the internet, if you are ever, and I mean this sort of facetiously, but there's some people out there that are actually not online. But if you use the internet, if you've got a cell phone, you've got a mobile phone, you watch Netflix, this has ramifications. And you know what? The way it's described is not exactly accurate. So we'll break that down for you. Also, there's still more trickling out of the Alabama race. And we're still talking about it. Well, for one, the candidate, well, as of yet, Moore has not acquiesced, has not accepted defeat in the race. He's holding on, and he's put out a statement. He put out a statement. He said, "Look, there's just a bunch of provisional ballots and military ballots from overseas that haven't been counted yet. So I'm not prepared at this time." To call the race. The thing is, the vote spread is over 20,000 votes. So it's 20,000 votes. I don't think you're going to make up any territory there with really what is a relatively handful of military votes and some provisional ballots. It's not going to happen. So I think that it's called being a sore loser. But it's on such a small amateur scale. So people have asked me, what do you make of this? How does this play out? It doesn't play out. There's nothing to say. It's the race is done. Jones is going to be the senator. And by the way, as far as it being a black eye for Republicans, no, not at all. In fact, the goofier that Roy Moore looks now and sounds now, the more explainable his loss is outside of any greater, national political context, right? You don't have to sit around saying, well, look at what this means for Trump. Look at what this means for Republicans in 2018. You can say, look, the guy's a nut, just like I've mentioned yesterday. He's a nut. He's a goofball, a bad candidate. Move along. And remember, I mean, Hillary still really hasn't given up on her prospects to become president in lieu of Trump. And she was a national candidate. She didn't just get picked by a handful of Alabama Republicans. She was picked by the Democratic National Committee. She was the victor of a national primary contest. So every time I hear, right now, left wing opinion guys talking about what this means, look at the Republicans, the kind of people they have. You guys have Hillary. Until you get rid of that albatross, I don't even want to hear it. So, this is all backed up, by the way. There was a great bit of, the great focus group on CNN. Pulse of the People focus group today. And what they did, they sat down with six Alabama voters. Now, even when Fox does this, even when they have, top people doing it, focus groups, I think, are relatively worthless in general because it's always a self-selected group. It's like a poll. In order to get, I think these were Alabama voters that were brought up to New York City. To the CNN studios there. So I always think, what would it take for, would you be on a focus group? Oh, yeah, maybe get a free trip to New York out of it. But most people I know wouldn't have time to do that kind of thing. So the people that end up on focus groups are a self-selected group of people who have enough free time on their hands to do that kind of thing. And so you already end up with a little bit of a different makeup. So anyway, they've got these six people there. And the makeup is, let's see, there were three women and three men. They don't, this is not accidental, by the way. They do this. And they try to get some, they try to get some racial diversity, too, because this is CNN, and they really care about the race issue as it relates to the Moore campaign. So fascinating. There's one gal there that looked like she might be some other type of race. Very difficult, maybe, to find in Alabama. So they got what's they got a white lady, a white guy. They've got two black guys and some other lady and a white guy. And they all voted for Trump, purportedly. They all voted for Trump. But of them, three regret it and three still support Trump. Right. So three have buyer's remorse and three don't. Now, what this is fascinating, because what they said, I actually think, really rings true, and you'll listen to this, by the way. You'll be able to explain what happened and what's going on politically here to your friends this weekend, because it's really important. So first, I'm going to go to this. They had this old grumpy white dude. His name is Jimmy Dozier, and this is the guy that is, I would say, the most, I don't know, the person on the panel who's most representative of Republicans in Alabama. At least this is what CNN was trying to do. And here is what Jimmy says about Roy Moore. And you'll hear Allison Camerota talking about what she asks him a question, you know, and then you'll hear his response. Very telling.
Jimmy, let me start with you. Lifelong Republican, yes. Why didn't you vote for Roy Moore?
He's all about Roy Moore. He's not about the people. He's not a Republican. He's a radical. He didn't win, and I'm glad he didn't win, because Doug Jones is going to be there 2 years, and he'll be gone.
Then you think a Republican will be back?
Oh, yeah, he'll be back. They could have run a three-legged dog against Roy Moore. They would have won.
Exactly what I said yesterday. It's just, Roy Moore's a terrible candidate. And even the Republicans, even, you know, just very, I don't know, conventionally right-wing Republicans in the state were over the guy. Now, remember what I said yesterday about the allegations against Moore? Because a lot of this, right, this has been billed as the Roy Moore election fits into the Me Too campaign. And in this sense, I think this campaign in Alabama still is worth talking about, because I think it gives us some clues as to public opinions about Me Too. And to me, Me Too is beginning to symbolize unfounded sex assault allegations. That's what Me Too is for me. You've got people coming forward, making an allegation, and the allegations essentially end up drumming people, ruining lives and drumming them out of their jobs and getting them fired or worse. And so I'm always looking, I'm sifting through all this stuff and material, and I look at Roy Moore, I go, well, how much of his loss are the allegations that he dated, attempted to date, potentially sexually assaulted underage girls when he was, you know, back in his early 30s, a district attorney in Alabama? And I've been trying to gauge that, because the answer to that question, I think, I believe, helps us understand the effects, long-term effects, the attitudes that people are really having about these allegations coming out there, right? I understand that employers, big companies who fear repercussions from lawsuits, who fear backlash from, you know, from boycotting, you know, consumer groups and the like, I understand why they overreact. But what I think is interesting is, what are the people really thinking, right? Of course, because when you get all caught up in a frenzy, it's never about what actual real attitudes are. It's how these attitudes are being whipped up and stirred up by a frothing at the mouth, politically correct, evangelizing media. It's always like that. And so this this reign of terror right now, where we're basically guillotining everybody and anybody that comes along on allegation alone, is a product of that. And I'm curious, looking at this election, all right, you've got a guy who, what I think Weinstein's pretty bad, right? Let's rank them, you know, all the terrible things. You got people who have been accused of, like Garrison Keillor, of putting his hand on the small of a woman's back, recoiling and saying, I'm sorry. And that somehow is a sex assault. Wrong. That's not. Even some of our, we'll call them more local accusations against Senator Franken, I think are a bit too overblown and overwrought. But then when you take what Harvey Weinstein's doing, drugging and raping women, and that is a crime. There's no gray area there. I'm just talking about the accusations. I'm not saying they're true. These are allegations. So there's a scale. And in that scale, I thought, just call me crazy, I thought that it's pretty bad to get accused of fondling teen girls that are not of age or attempting to fondle. The dating thing, I don't know. The age of consent in Alabama, 16. This was 30 years ago. Attitudes were maybe a little bit different. Also, I'm warning you, I'm European. And in Europe, the age of consent in many countries is lower than 16. I'm just telling you, like, to me, the real Roy Moore, the particularly stinky thing was you've got an alleged attempted rape of an underage girl. And that's bad on that scale, from, we'll call it, the Garrison Keillor to Harvey Weinstein scale. So with this setup now, I'm curious, what effect has it had on the race? What effect did it have with these voters? And when you look at this panel that CNN put out there, and this was today, the CNN panel Pulse of the People did a focus group with six Alabama voters, and they brought these guys in, and there's three. They all voted for Trump, supposedly, right? But three of them no longer support Trump, and three of them still remain firmly committed to the MAGA, that's Make America Great Again, for those of you not in the know, platform. So, now, this was interesting. Who believes Roy Moore's accusers? Camerata asks this question. Listen to this.
How many of you believed Roy Moore's accusers? So one of you strongly believed them. Saudi, why do you not know?
Being a female, if something ever happened to me in any kind of way, and I didn't speak out about it or file a complaint or go to the police immediately or within a certain time period, I have a hard time 30, 40 years later. I would have brought attention or light to it far sooner.
Saudi is the unknown race person. I'm just giving it to you because this is what you would notice if you're watching it. So don't get all over me for being. Is it Saudia? Well, OK, well, whatever. I don't know what she is. I can't tell. But if you were looking at this video, these are things you would notice. And given that this is radio, my job not to be politically correct, but to give you the facts. So this girl, this is what she says. Being a female, if something ever happened to me in any kind of way and I didn't speak out about it or file a complaint or go to the police immediately, I have a hard time 30, 40 years later. I would have brought attention to it far sooner. Like maybe, you know, when he was running in other past, you know, important elections in the state. There was only one person on this panel. Now, mind you, three of these people no longer down with Trump. You know, no longer, you know, none of these people seem to like the candidate, Roy Moore. None of them voted for him. None of them were into it. But only one believed the accusations. Let me give you another snippet here. Steve, who is, let's see here, he voted for Trump but regrets it. Very well-spoken guy. He says this about accusations.
We're looking at an accusation. You're not looking at something that's just morally wrong. You're looking at something that's legally wrong. And at the same time, if it's legally wrong, you need evidence, not just an accusation. We shouldn't live in a society where an accusation makes you guilty.
Fantastic. I literally have nothing else to add to that. But do you see my point? I think that this reign of terror, this Me Too, I've been harassed and ergo your head must come off. We're lopping you off with the guillotine. I think this is not going to wear well long term with the public. I really do. And I know these folks are from Alabama, but trust me, I don't think this is wearing well. This is good news for justice and for common sense. All right, more on this when we come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
5, 6, 5, 6, 7. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Talking about these allegations, right? The allegations against anyone, really, all famous Hollywood people, politicians. You know, you saw it here in the race in Alabama. I'm curious to what extent these allegations, right, are influencing actual public opinion of people. So I thought Harvey Weinstein was a fat piece of crap before any of this happened. I mean, it was, I'm like, oh man, he really fell from my high esteem. I don't think anybody in this town thinks this way. Now, when it comes to these actors, Kevin Spacey, Kevin Spacey grabs a guy's junk. Yeah, it's a sex assault. Report the crime. Call the police, file a police report, and let the investigation take place. Now, do I have to suffer? Do I have to suffer the loss of my favorite Netflix show because you didn't report it to the cops for whatever reason? Okay, I get it. It's embarrassing. By the way, I don't know. I mean, I'm saying this as a guy. I've shared with you my story, my famous hot tub story. Now, everybody's calling me about it. Frick. Why did I tell you about that? Anyway, I don't know. Like, it's not embarrassing. I mean, well, you if you're sitting at a bar and Kevin Spacey, this is the story that, like, I think happened over and over again. Kevin Spacey comes up to you, says, hi, how's your name? How are you doing? Can I buy you a drink? By the way, can I grab your sack? I mean, that's how that went down. It's not embarrassing. Report it to the police. And it's interesting that that's what that Saudi girl on this lady on this CNN panel, Trump voters reacting to Roy Moore defeat. That's one of the things that she says. She says, look, you come out with a complaint 30 years later. What the hell? That doesn't make any sense. Oh, go to the police, file a police report. And there are reasonable statute of limitations. And for minors, by the way, they're extended. I mean, you can really go to the cops substantially later. But the difference is the police have a system. They have a protocol. They have evidentiary rules. They're going to submit their case to the district attorney. And the district attorney determines if there is, in fact, enough evidence to pursue a claim. So anyway, we had, did we play the Darius clip? Darius talking about the false accusations are hugely damaging. A camerata asked him, you didn't believe the accusers. Listen to this.
You didn't believe the accusers?
I don't know if I do or I don't. I don't want to live in a world where people can just start being accused of things and they lose their jobs, they lose their careers. We're in a society now where we just jump to these conclusions and we literally ruin people's lives and nobody thinks about that afterwards. But I don't believe in just accusing people and believe in one person or the other because none of us were there.
Yeah, and you heard it. There's a little chime in. Saudi says, I agree with that, you know. And they disagree. They're actually disagreeing on some other political points in this discussion, but they both agree. I'm telling you, huge common ground in a diverse panel, we'll say that, a diverse panel, huge common ground on accusations alone are not enough, right? And 5 out of 6, it bears noting that Kim, she explains it. Maybe it's a long clip. But anyway, she explains that she says, you know, she explains she's a rape victim, and she just looked at the women and saw what they said. Let me see. Where do I have it? Yeah, I do believe them. I'm a survivor of rape, and I watch them. I don't even know what they've said to this day. I've never heard anything they've said. I just watch them. They're telling the truth. I remember this. I was on a jury years ago. I was an alternate, so I didn't have any part in making a decision. But the government didn't prove their case at all. And then the jury, full of ninny teachers, they all convict the guy. And you know what they said? Afterwards, I'm talking to somebody like, I can just tell from his body language that he's guilty. And I'm like, you are a freaking idiot. You just convicted a guy based on what you think about their body language. There's an evidentiary standard. They didn't meet the burden of proof. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, so juries aren't perfect either is what I'm getting at. All right, we got John Wolf up next with the news. Don't go anywhere. I'll be back right after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC, Thursday night. And here we go. We have, a couple bits of news that I'm going to get to and I'll address. Did you hear this this whispering that Paul Ryan might be retiring? He's denying it, of course. But Boehner, you'll remember Boehner when he was Speaker of the House. He denied his retirement rumors right up until the day before he announced his resignation. I mean, he was flatly denying it 48 hours before he resigned. Let me tell you why Congress is a tough gig. You run for re-election every 2 years. You don't live necessarily in your district. I'm telling you, being a congressman, the job blows. Because you're important. You know, you wear the little pin and, you know, you've got a staff and everything. But for really in the grand scheme of things, you don't make a whole lot of money. You're always on the road. Travel is expensive. Consequently, you're always crammed in like the middle seat and coach somewhere, the back of the airplane between two giant fatties that smell like the meal that they had 3 days ago. It's terrible. And you're away from, if you're a family man, you're not sleeping at home. You're sleeping on a cot in your office. A lot of these guys do this. The big guys, the big honchos, they buy their townhomes and they move into D.C., right? They become D.C. people. So that's part of where the gig gets kind of obnoxious. And that is what Paul Ryan is mentioning. He's saying, like, people close to him are saying, well, I have kids that I want to see and they're growing up and blah, blah, blah. But the real background here is that Ryan is this wonk. He's a political wonk. He's a nerd. He totally is out of touch and out of step with what's going on in the country. And he's realizing it. And he's got an increasingly hostile membership in the House. And he's also, I think, setting this up for, he's potentially saying, look, if he ends up with big losses in 2018, he wants to be able to say, yeah, I'm retiring. I've been planning this for a while and, you know, see you later. Adios. But the other part of it is, I don't necessarily know. He came within a hair of not getting reelected as Speaker of the House. And it's because of the Freedom Caucus. It's because of conservatives in the House, especially if there are more and more freshman congressmen coming in who are, well, we got, four, we have, what, where's my count? Four freshman congressmen, right? Those four special elections that Chuck Todd thinks, you know, show just how much Trump is losing steam in the heartland. Yeah, they all went to Republicans, but those are all new Republicans. Those are all Republicans that were elected by voters who wanted the Trump agenda to advance. And it is in this context that if you're Ryan, I want to get the hell out of there too. I don't want to hang out and face this type of hostility. He absolutely loathes Trump. I read an article today. Well, this is fascinating. You know, him and Trump are getting along, and he's helping an agenda get through, and da da da. I'm listening to that. He hates Trump. Trump is going. Trump literally has launched an all out career, a war to destroy Ryan's career. Ryan is the kind of politician that does things carefully and thinks them through and da-da-da, but he may be completely out of touch with what this country needs. But he's thought about it, and he's put it down in his notepad, and he's drawn his calculations and his, you know, projections, and this is what we're going to do. And Trump is a guy who just gets it. He gets it because he's been in the real world. He's achieved things in the real world. He understands people, and so he might shoot from the hip, but he hits the mark a lot more than a guy like Paul Ryan does. It's the same thing like when you've got the guy in school and he's prepping for tests all the time, gets the B+, and then the kid that doesn't study at all rolls in and gets the A+. The fact of the matter is, the kid with the A+ actually did prepare, but in a different way, in a smart way. But the kid with the B+, who thinks he put in more sweat equity, that kid hates the A+ student. Trust me on this. That's the dynamic that's happening behind the scenes. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky here for my friend, my lawyer, sweet James Bergner. This is the guy you need to call if you've been in an accident, if you've had perhaps one of Santa's elves step on your big toe. What else can happen Christmas season? Well, frankly, there's a lot of people out there on the road that are doing crazy things, and they're not paying attention and they're getting into accidents. Don't let that happen to you. But if it does, you need to know that you've got the right person to call. And that person is James. James and his team, they know what to do. They will help you. They will take you through the process. They'll handle everything so you don't have to. It's holiday season. What do you want to do? You just want to hang out with family, right? Do your Christmas shopping and get through life. Let James handle the rest. Easy phone number to remember, 800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. That's the way to reach Sweet James and his team. No recovery, no fee. Over $400 million collected for his clients. And that number continues to go up. It's just insane. You also want to remember, all consultations, anytime you call, it's free. So just call him, call James and get some help on your case. 1-800-881-2021 or visit sweetjames.com. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Now, no bomb threats were called into the studio today, thankfully, because right as the FCC chairman, Ajit Pai started speaking at the FCC headquarters and was announcing the decision on net neutrality. The commission voted 3-2, to abolish Obama-era net neutrality rules. I'll explain what those are in a second. But right as he begins speaking, the security people run in and whisper in his ear and he very calmly says, we're going to have to take a minute here. It turns out somebody said that there was a briefcase that had a bomb in it and it was about to go off. All right. So after everything got reordered, refigured out, the police did a sweep. I don't think they found anything. It was just a hoax. They got back down to it, announced that these rules would be changing. Net neutrality. Net neutrality sounds great, doesn't it? I mean, we want the internet to be neutral. We want the internet to be like Switzerland. I mean, it's just got to be there for everybody. No, it does not, because the internet, my friends, this is classic Obama era socialism. The internet is an asset. The internet is real estate. In many ways, no different than other real estate. Like, for example, apartments, homes, office buildings. If you look at a condo high-rise tower somewhere in, let's say, San Francisco. I want to speak to liberals out there. I want you to understand. We use language you get. High-rise in San Francisco, the penthouse costs more than the little one-bedroom downstairs, right? Lost anybody yet? Well, Obama decided that we should have net neutrality and charge everyone the same, basically regardless of how big of a player they were in the world of the internet. Now, sounds great, but what it does is it creates no incentive to make the internet better for people who will pay more. And in turn, what happens there is fascinating stuff. Right. Who are the big players in the internet? Well, one of them is Netflix. If you like Netflix, let me ask you something. What's the worst thing that happens to you in your life? Because a lot of people I know, the worst thing that happens is they come home from work, they plop themselves down on the couch, they turn on their TV and their Apple TV or whatever Roku they have to stream Netflix, and they get the spinny wheel of death. That right there is the end of the world for some people I know, like me. Well, the idea is that if companies are free to negotiate for priority traffic, and a big guy like Netflix can come in and say, hey, Comcast or whoever, I want dedicated bandwidth for the benefit of my customers who pay a lot of money to get my subscription. Well, Obama wants it that the fat guy down the... Sorry, I've been picking on fat people today. It's because I've been eating a lot over the holidays. But anyway, the guy down the street who's downloading porn on his computer, his thing, he gets the same amount of priority as a multi-billion-dollar company. And that is not good. It's not good for the marketplace. I'll give you another example when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. The net neutrality abolition today, we'll call it that, the eradication, the wipeout of the Obama era rules are a good thing for consumers in the long run. Let me explain. Price controls always sound good to socialists, but never work. And this is essentially a version of a price control because it doesn't allow internet companies to charge more for premium bandwidth. It treats all traffic on the internet the same. So look, you live in, I don't know, let's say you live in, what's up there, Norco, Corona, and you drive on the literally one of the worst freeways ever created, the 91. And what do you have there? You've got these rich people lanes, right? Isn't that what they call them? There's a couple of lanes that are carpool lanes for it's a toll carpool lane. Well, you have them on the Harbor 110 too, don't you? That is the internet now, after this rule has been wiped out. The internet before is no priority for anybody, anywhere, anytime. But it's nice to be able to pay for increased bandwidth when you need it. It is good if a hospital or if Netflix or if these companies that streaming right now is a huge thing. And it's, and by the way, and cloud-based services from big companies, IBM, who's one of the big leaders? Oracle, I think, does it. Certainly Apple. Look, you want your cloud-based hard drive from Apple to have its own dedicated internet carpool lane, we'll call it, and free from the other stuff, you know, people browsing, you know, crocheted sweaters for their llamas and you know, crap like that. The rule didn't exist. The Obama-era rule didn't exist until 2014. Was the internet really that bad? I mean, were we sitting around going, oh, man, my internet just stinks. I wish Obama would do something about it. But no, Obama's a freaking commie pinko. And so the first thing he had to do is, I mean, this rule was so anti-competitive. It's not even funny. So this is, and by the way, you know what I really enjoy about this? Well, you're listening to me, so I'll tell you what I love the fact that all these Silicon Valley Trump haters, all the Zuckerbergs and the, you know, the what's it nots up there, you know, they're all, yeah, they didn't like this net neutrality thing one bit. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, they gave it lip service and they da da da, but it's not good for big internet companies. They don't want this in the long run. So it's just another example of Trump doing something that's going to help them. And they're not, it's a catch-22. Their taxes are going down. Net neutrality's gone. They still hate Trump. He's still an awful person. It just reminds me of the story. We were talking about it just the other day. That chick from Israel that you met, remember? And what did she say? She says it's all about the Jerusalem decision and Trump. She hates Trump. You know, Trump is the worst. The worst. If I'm doing my outer borough accent. And I just wish that this would have been done by another president, because the taint of Trump on this thing is just beneath me. Well, get over yourself, honey. And embrace the Trumpdom. Hey, homelessness. You think it's a problem? You know, you hear about the war on homelessness. I'm rolling out my own version of this next hour, right at the top of the hour. If you're a left-wing person and you're a little bit of a snowflake, don't listen. Whatever you do, do not listen. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. John Wolfe up next with the news.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. So here we are, another hour of radio fun coming right up. Let me tell you, before we talk about the homeless, and boy, do I have some thoughts on this. Let me give you a little bit of show updates. Tomorrow night, I unfortunately cannot be here physically in the Sweet James Studios deep behind the orange curtain because I have to be on a plane headed to Dallas. Now, don't worry. Producer Robbie is curating an excellent, top-notch, best-of show. Puts a lot of thought into this. And if you think that he doesn't, if you don't like a best-of show ever, from time to time we have to do one. If you don't like what you get, you tell me. I want to hear from you because we guarantee listener satisfaction here on Sam Nation. But yes, I'm headed to Dallas. I can't talk about what it is. Top secret mission. But on Monday, if I can get all my clearances signed off here from the Sweet James Studios, maybe, just maybe, I can tell you about it. You have to tune in Monday and I'll give you the breakdown. Kind of a fun trip, honestly. I'll tell you that. All right. So the homeless have been in the news over and over and over again. And by the way, if I were homeless, I would consider getting together, you know, with other homeless people and get a good publicist. Because I think that as far as the news cycle's been lately, not good. Not good for the homeless lobby. And no one's saying anything about it, right? You saw the house, six houses burned in Bel Air because one homeless idiot is cooking out in the rough, the stove. And I don't know if I'm, I saw, I'm listening to that news the other day. It's Tuesday, was it, right? And I'm listening to it and I'm like, why is nobody saying that the problem here isn't the wind, it's the homeless? I don't understand how six homeowners who pay an unbelievable amount in property taxes into the state coffers, and well, in the county and local municipalities coffers, who pay state taxes, who pay sales tax, who pay, they're taxed every time they breathe. And these homeowners, these engaged participants in our vibrant economy cannot get some protection, any protection from their government when it comes to these encampments that are just taking over everywhere. I'm in Orange County. No secret, I tell you about this all the time. And when you go down here to Orange County, you go down to the courthouse, I've mentioned this as well, homeless encampment, huge homeless encampment. It's disgusting. It's horrible. It's sick. You look, San Francisco. I go up to San Francisco quite a bit, and that's actually where there's a news story about a security robot that is working for the SBCA. Well, the robot may or may not be gainful employed. I think it was owned by the SPCA. This is a Nightscope K5 security robot. How bad does that sound? K5 security robot. We'll have to put a picture up of it. It kind of looks, how do I describe this? It's a little bit more conic than C-3PO, but like a bigger C-3PO. Frankly, almost a little bit intimidating. Almost a little bit. 400 pounds. And it was deployed by the SPCA, which is the animal rights organization. Right there, the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. You know them from watching cable news and those very awful commercials that they put on with the puppies, you know, with their big eyes, and they're shivering and shaking and they're asking for donations, right? That's the group. Yeah. Anyway, so they, where they're located in the city, has a homeless problem, which basically is a problem everywhere right now in San Francisco, but especially over in the market when you go from the financial district over to what's known as the Tenderloin. And in this particular area, homeless everywhere, but it's an important street. Market Street is like one of the most important streets in San Francisco. If you are a tourist, if you're a business person, if you're, well, it's, by the way, there's a law school. You basically, if you go from the financial district to Hastings School of Law to City Hall, right? City Hall, kind of an important place. I don't know, maybe, whatever. But anyway, between there, it's like Sherwood. You know, it's really a no-go, terrifying place. And I'm talking about during the day. Forget at night. So anyway, this robot ends up, well, this is what the news is reporting, that the security robot was bullied and forced off the street in San Francisco. This is the media, of course. San Francisco media. Everybody gets bullied, even a robot. So this poor bullied robot gets knocked over by the homeless people that it's monitoring. And then somebody smears some feces on it. Somebody also put barbecue sauce on this robot. I'm not exactly sure what message that's intending to send, but at any rate, by the way, insult to injury, this robot then is fined by the city. The SPCA gets a nasty letter from the city of San Francisco, who threatens to fine the SPCA for $1,000 a day for operating an unlicensed piece of equipment on a public sidewalk. So you have an organization that is fighting to protect and save animals, who tries to protect and save its own employees from harassment and assault and their property from getting vandalized. And the city sends a letter saying you can't have the robot on the street, but it ain't no problem to have 100 homeless people in front of your building, all, you know, letting out their various bodily fluids at will. Do you understand where that does not compute? Where this, if the alien spaceship, if that cigar that is hurtling through space and supposedly, according to Stephen Hawking, has some, you know, signs of life on it. Can you imagine if they landed somewhere, you know, like in San Francisco in front of City Hall and saw this? Especially if they're higher life forms, you know, and they can compute things really easily, they wouldn't get it. Wait a minute. You're telling me that the business that is in the business of helping animals and, you know, doing good stuff can't protect its own property that they pay taxes on, that they pay through the nose for, et cetera, et cetera. And that this society here gives deference to derelicts and petty criminals and people who are, you know, nuts for the most part, drug-addled nut jobs. It's crazy. And you see this play out time and time again. I don't get it. Orange County, I literally do not understand what the County Board of Supervisors are doing, except I know they're idiots. I know that for a fact. But I tell you, City Hall, the City Center, the Civic Center, whatever you want to call it, these places are for all of us to enjoy. This is one of the common great libertarian principles, in my view, is that, you know, you allow public areas, you're supposed to get, you got to figure out how to get along with everybody and make it work. And the border, right, the test of where a behavior or we'll call it activities are to be regulated by the state. You know where the border is set? The border is set where your activities begin to negatively affect another person who has a reasonable expectation to be free of being bothered by your bothersome activity. It's a long way of saying, I'll explain it this way. If it doesn't bother me, I don't care what you do. And by the way, what doesn't bother me, it's not what doesn't bother me, like, according to the liberal standard. It's a reasonable person standard. It's like, if a reasonable person's not bothered by that, great. You be you, I be me. My right to swing my fist ends where your nose begins. Got it? So I don't understand why our governments are so lost in kissing up to homelessness that they aren't protecting our rights to walk down a sidewalk, walk to the courthouse, walk into City Hall to get married, to get a marriage license, hell, what is this? It all comes down to this absolutely militant political correctness where homelessness has become this holy cow that you cannot touch or say anything about. There's a war on homelessness. How many times have you heard politicians say that? Well, right now, tonight, on this program, I've had it. And you know what? I'm standing up for this robot in San Francisco. I'm standing up for the Nightscope K5 security robot that was tipped over, that had feces smeared on it, and even some barbecue sauce. And today is the day that I say enough is enough. Forget the war on homelessness. It's a war on homeless. It's absurd. It's absurd that business owners in San Francisco, in LA, in Orange County, pay property taxes, collect sales tax revenues for the state, are regulated at every turn, have all these costs imposed upon them to operate their businesses. And the state, right, be it the city or the county or whatever, whoever the local sovereign is violating the core. Well, that's an unwritten contract, but it's a contract nonetheless. You pay into the system and we keep you safe. You pay to have your business in our city, on our street, and we, in turn, will pay to maintain that street. The irony of charging, not charging, it's a fining, the SPCA, the animal rights group, fining them $1,000 a day for operating an unlicensed robot on the same street where the city allows untold number of gross vagrants defecating and doing God knows what else. No problem. That's okay. Now, there is a little bit of interesting law behind it. I'm always curious about it because this is what people say. Are we allowed to kick the homeless out? I mean, I didn't think we were allowed to do that. And the answer is, you are. You are. And the only, I know, people are going to say, people are going to cite the Boise example. So Boise, they did a vagrancy law. They passed a vagrancy law. And guess who sued them? Yes, our favorite commie pinko, Barack Obama. The Justice Department in 2015 succeeded in a lawsuit I don't know. I don't think it was heard by the Supreme Court, though. I have to look it up. So it's not necessarily settled law, but the argument that was made by the Obama Justice Department is that it was an Eighth Amendment issue. It was a cruel and unusual punishment. And their logic makes sense, but only halfway. You know, it's to classic classic Obama. So the idea is you must sleep. We all must sleep. Sleeping is not a choice. It's essential to life. And if you tell a homeless person they can't sleep on a corner and there's no other nearby areas to sleep, well, you're basically telling them they can't sleep, and that's cruel and unusual punishment. Okay. That's all fine and dandy, except there are places to sleep outside of the city. I mean, you don't need to sleep right there in a public park. There are places to be, and I don't. This is an argument that is just it's a non-starter. There's so many open areas to be, and towns have got to do something about this. The only reason they don't do this, that they don't fight homelessness, is because they lack the political will to do it. Because everybody feels bad for the homeless. And I get it. It sucks to be homeless. And most people, by the way, we're not realistic about the homeless problem at all, right? It's a drug problem. It's a mental health problem. Okay? It's not a lack of homes problem. It's not an economics problem. Of course, to a point, but it really is. It comes down to mental health. And the example I always give is if you're truly indigent in this country, there is such a security net out there that can provide for you, but you have to figure it out. And if you can't figure it out, then, you know, that's a little bit of a problem and a challenge. So it really, I mean, but my point is here, the expectation is that our government should take care of us too. And we taxpayers, we deserve something too. It's about time that somebody speaks up on our behalf. It's reasonable. It's rational. I don't get this. All right. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Aha, Christmas party time. It's the season, and every year I talk about this, but I don't know. So much other stuff going on. Here's a reminder of what not to do at your company Christmas party. Well, by the way, does your company Christmas party have an open bar? So I'll tell you something. Open bar at your company Christmas party with all of your coworkers and your bosses present is not really an open bar. You have got to imagine that you have two drink coupons and you're going to take them up to the bar. And that is whatever your limit is. If two drinks puts you under the table, then don't make it two drinks. Go up, make your first drink, a soda and lime. Every year that we do our company Christmas party, without fail, there is always someone who ends up horizontal. And it's interesting, actually, that in this climate of sexual harassment allegations, one of the things that is being reported as being a potential victim of this movement is the open bar at Christmas parties. Because apparently the open bar at Christmas parties has caused problems. Although I don't really remember too many examples of, you know, corporate Christmas parties gone awry in the news, at least. Was it Vox? Was that who said that it was the media company? Yeah. Well, maybe it has to do with who they hire. Resistance to Trump can actually be an aphrodisiac. Where that with a combination of three to four drinks makes you, you know, get all over your female coworkers. I don't know. They are supposedly woke, but, you know, they I tell you, all these people are frustrated that there no longer is a double standard. I mean, that's a whole other separate part of this conversation. But when it comes to Christmas parties, please do me a favor. Consider this a Sam Nation alert. Really, really, there's two things that you do. Number one, you grab an In-N-Out burger or some other carby delicious treat beforehand. You do not show up to your company Christmas party on an empty stomach, because that is never a good idea to start pounding drinks on an empty stomach, and you all know what I mean. So that is your first step. That is a Sam Nation pro tip. So you go, you grab some, or pizza, something just big, heavy, carby, you stuff it down in your stomach before you go anywhere. And then when you show up, you secretly, at the bar from the bartender, you order a club soda or whatever it is. It looks, put a little straw in it, make it look like, tell the guy, I'm recovering alcoholic. But you say, put a little straw in it, you know, whatever, make it look like a cocktail, but it's not. It's sparkling water or Coke or whatever. But make it look like a cocktail. And then that is what you drink for the first maybe hour and a half of the party. And then eventually you move on to the cocktail, because, you know, I don't, if you like, it's all about if you like your job. I get it. Some people are like, I'm out of here. I hate this place anyway. And I'm just going to get, you know, I'm going to get sloshed. And then, you know, consequences be damned. But you really do run the risk of doing something so epic in front of so many people that know you professionally in an industry that you maybe will stay in, or somebody somewhere down the road is going to remember, and you will never live that story down. We still talk about some people from years ago and things, epic things they did at Christmas parties. I don't know where they are. I don't know what they're doing, but I do remember what they did at a Christmas party back in, 2012. And I always think, what'll happen if that person, later surfaces, and back then they were maybe in school and were working for us as a legal assistant, and now they're surfacing and they're an attorney. You don't want that. You don't want that to follow you. Okay, do you know what the government does with money that's left over at the end of the year? Well, they probably don't do what you do with it, okay? And I'll tell you, this is not pretty, but it's something you ought to know. And it's one of the things that we really ought to change about our government. You want to get rid of want to get cash positive and start to get rid of the debt? This might be a way to accomplish it. All right. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Got John Wolfe up next with the news.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Okay, what does the government do with money that it doesn't use at the end of the year? I think for those of us lucky enough to have some cash left over at the end of the year, what do we do? Well, if you're smart, you save it. You just hold on to it. Because, on December 31st, whatever cash you have in your account will still be there on January 1st. It's this crazy thing. It's just the money in our account stays there, okay, for the most part, unless something unforeseen happens. Unless you've invested in Bitcoin. You never know. But for the government, for all the government agencies, including for the in military branches, right? They, whatever money they don't spend by the end of the year, gets taken from them. You know this? So the Treasury, the U.S. Treasury, which is the master banker for all of government, right? They will come and grab whatever's left over. So do you know what these agencies do to prevent that from happening? They spend money like drunken whore, right? That's what they do. They literally go right now, this time of year is spending time. If you are any agency, the U.S. Department of Agriculture last year, they bought $7.3 million worth of Glocks. Those are guns, those of you not in the NRA. It's the U.S. It's the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Okay? That, yeah, and you think they're like squirrel busting out there? The little, no, yeah, exactly. I don't, oh, I go for Everett. excuse me. I'm dying over here. Long day. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. The Department of Health and Human Services spent $83 million in the month of December on furniture. Yeah, I don't think so. They spend money so that they don't lose it. But also, more importantly, they're not so much concerned about losing the money. They're concerned that coming in under budget will get them cut in next year's budget. And this is the perverse upside-down motivation that our government has to spend our hard-earned tax dollars like it's nobody's business. The government, instead of rewarding frugal agencies that save their dough by letting them carry it over into the next year, takes it from them and then penalizes them when they come back asking for more money the following year. Make sense? In the military, I have a well-placed source who spent some time in the Air Force, and he describes how they would buy so many giant big-screen plasma TVs. I mean, this was some years ago, so these were things were hugely expensive. 70-inch TV, I mean, you know, $10,000, $8,000, whatever it was. And, of course, they were supplying it through Halliburton, so it was probably a $100,000 TV. And they would call it wallpaper. They wouldn't even plug it in. They would just put it up on the wall. It's wallpaper. And they were literally finding the big ticket items that they could spend money on at the end of the year. And that's the Air Force. That's the military. And these nonsense agencies like the USDA and the Department of Health and Human Services and, you know, probably the EPA, too. I mean, yeah, it's absurd. And these are the defects in our government that we have to fix to get real. And so I don't want to hear it about, you know, about poor people dying out on the street because, you know, we're lowering the corporate tax rate to 21%. The problem is that all of government needs to go on a huge diet. And it starts with some logic like this. This is common sense. It really is. I don't think there's a political angle to this. I think liberals and conservatives alike can agree that spending money on nothing just to keep your budget for the following year is dumb. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski here for my friend, my attorney, Sweet James Bergner. This is the lawyer you want to call if you've been in an accident, if you've been, I don't know, hit by a car, a bus, a train, had maybe an animal bite you, a homeless person bite you. Never know. It can happen. And certainly this Christmas season, people are out there doing crazy things. So if you are hurt, if you're injured, have an injury, talk to James and his team. They will help you get you through it. Don't try doing this on your own. This is not a do-it-yourself project. You're up against an insurance company. You're up against attorneys. They're sophisticated. They know what they're doing. And their entire purpose is to screw you out of what you deserve. So have somebody fighting for you on your side and make that person Sweet James Bergner and his team. All right. It's easy to reach him. Consultations are free, and he won't charge you anything until he resolves your case. 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit sweetjames.com. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC. So, real sad news, by the way. For me, at least, out of Europe, my daughter right now, my 7-year-old daughter Vera, she is in Rome with my parents. So my parents, how fantastic is this? They come to me and say, "Hey, we want to take Vera to Rome, just us." So what am I going to say? Of course. And then I had to convince Sherry to go for it. which was a little bit harder because, of course, she's like, I know it's a good thing for her, but we're letting her go all the way to Italy. It's frightening. I said, no, it's going to be okay. This is good for them. And they are having a fantastic time. But here's where the story gets sad. Okay. When I was a kid, I remember I went to Rome a few times. You know, my parents are from Europe, so we spent a lot of time in Europe. And one of the things about Italy in the 80s, certainly when I was little, was Christmas was a big deal. The Christmas markets, the squares all decorated. The 2 weeks before Christmas, especially in these very Catholic countries, I mean, epic. And for me, probably some of my happiest memories. Well, guess what is happening with all these Christmas displays? You want to guess? Anyone? Any takers? They're disappearing. My mom's sending me pictures of all these squares that you know we'd visited in the past, and they're just bare. Police everywhere. And this is what we have ISIS to thank for. Actually, I'm going to back up here. Actually, this is the result of this perversely stupid multiculturalist agenda that has been foisted on us by the left. And it is absolutely from the get-go, this idea that it's about diversity and about, you know, we want to bring in a mix of people. We didn't bring in a mix of people. In countries like the Netherlands, countries like Sweden, there isn't a mix of people. It's 80% from the Middle East. And culturally, incompatible. And among them, a significant portion of radicals. And nobody stopped to think, hey, maybe this is going to be a problem. And now, right, that you had Al-Qaeda and ISIS radicalize these people and give them a purpose and, you know, show them how to build bombs and how to steal trucks. Because I guess they didn't figure that out on their own. They needed a website to tell them. So this is happening. And the result of it is that traditions that have been alive and developing in Europe for 2,000 years are disappearing. This is so disgustingly sick that it should enrage any decent human being. But it doesn't, because you see politicians, you see them in this country. Chris Cuomo, when we had the attack, well, this is, you know, in New York last week. Well, this is just the reality that New Yorkers have to live with. No, it's not a reality that we need to live with. We got to boot these people, get them out of here. If they don't like our culture and they don't like the West and they're not down with coexisting with Christians and Westerners and I don't know, heathen, right? If godless people like me are not palatable to them, well, then screw you. Buzz out of my country. And guess what? Fine. I won't go to Saudi Arabia and I won't go to Iran where they have their own expectations of what the prototypical citizen looks like. This is such a joke. And it's sad. It's sad. I hope all the liberals aren't there happy. This Christmas in Europe, you liberals, you are the Grinches. Because this thing's on you. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
I saw a satirical piece earlier today that said that Donald Trump demands that Billie Holiday change her name to Billie Christmas. Yeah, Sam Rzhovsky here, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. But, you know, when it comes to this culture war on Christmas, well, you know, everybody being politically correct, happy holidays and that. Not, I was, you want to know a funny story? I say Merry Christmas to everybody. I don't care if they're wearing a yarmulke. I'm gonna wish them Merry Christmas. And you know what? I'm not offended if somebody wishes me Happy Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or whatever. You can wish me anything you want, but this Happy Holidays thing is just crap. Happy Holidays. Okay, Happy Holidays to you too. Anyway, so Merry Christmas. I'm a big advocate of it. I'm over at a restaurant and I am with James. I'm at this restaurant and the waitress comes up to the table. And she gets really confused, and she kind of looks at us, and she goes, well, it looks at me and says, Merry Christmas, and then looks at James and says, Happy Hanukkah. So good. Didn't know where to go with it. So here's a tip on what to do with these holidays greetings. Just say Merry Christmas. Say whatever you want. It doesn't matter. Don't worry. We're so obsessed with saying the wrong thing. It's dumb. But this war on Christmas, this whole idea that, you know, we don't want to offend, we've got to just eradicate any of these traditional things, just make it all really vanilla. This is kind of the problem, right? This is where this stuff has gotten us to be, what I was explaining about in Europe. And when my parents lived in Amsterdam, in Holland in the 70s, this multicultural movement was big. It was just beginning to really flourish. And the founding principles of it, the denizens of this multicultural movement at the time, were people who very much were embarrassed about their Western traditions and their conservative historical traditions. And they were revolutionaries. They intended from the get-go. This wasn't an accident, right? It's not an accident that now all these Christmas markets are gone and that it's terrorism and whatnot, because, you know, we've imported a bunch of people into our country that don't like us, et cetera, et cetera. Fine. It's not necessarily even about that. It's that the people that opened the gates, the floodgates of multiculturalism and letting everybody in and just not caring if, hey, those people over there, they're from a radically different culture that isn't necessarily going to mesh well with ours. They looked at it and says, that's good. We want that. And they advocated for it as it being a good thing to mix things up back home and to sort of eradicate their parents' traditions. Now, my opinion on this has always been that when it came to Germany, for example, that this was penance for the horrors of World War II. And Germany felt that its culture had, you know, in some respects, rightly so, led to a Holocaust. There's a element of self-loathing to it, certainly. And certainly among the political left that dominated European politics in the 70s. We can learn from this is what I'm getting at. We can learn from this. And instead of having all of Europe go to hell in a handbasket, okay, we here in America, we can just elect Donald Trump, roll back things a little bit, adjust, right? So even if you don't like Trump, let me tell you, this is a good adjustment. When you look at how far things got elsewhere, this little Trump adjustment on some of our cultural views, not the end of the world. And also, Merry Christmas. I'm going to say that too. All right. I will best of show tomorrow night. Going to Texas. When I come back Monday, I will tell you what that trip is all about. You'll want to know. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. People.